Propagating truth in a world of lies. You are listening to the John Age Project.
Hello and welcome to the Anomic Age. I'm your host, John Age. Today is April 30th, very last day of April, 2019. As you might expect, we got a great show prepared for you today. A lot of good stuff to talk about. Well, I don't know if good stuff's the right word. We got a lot of stuff to talk about in the proverbial news segment. But before you do any of that, make sure you check out AnomicAge.com. That's AnomicAge.com, Anomic. Just like it's supposed to be, AnomicAge.com, where you can find all the information on our past guests, on me, on the past shows, all kinds of great guests and show links, too. If you haven't already checked out the show links for our past guests, I highly recommend it. I've been sending those out to a lot of people lately. There's a lot of good guests that we've had. We've been really blessed on this program to have some really terrific guests on board, so... Please check those out, AnomicAge.com. From there, you can go check out all of our social media links. You can look at the Twitter, the Facebook, and that's kind of the usual suspects. Oh, I forgot to have Brighteon and YouTube as well. If you're happening to check any of those out, please like the links, share them with your friends. As always, I always say, share everything Anomic Age with your friends, family, loved ones, and enemies, most importantly. So check out all that as well. If you're new to the program, you can absolutely check out the videos each week. They're available on the Anomic Age site as well as YouTube. And there's quite a few on Brighteon as well. I'm still sort of waiting for Brighteon to catch up, or I suppose me to catch up to they have a minimum before you can post more videos, minimum views. So check out those Brighteon clips. Check out those old ones. They're not too old, but they're sort of the first 2 months worth of the Anomic Age on Brighteon. They're on YouTube as well, but check out Brighteon first so we can get those clicks and likes up so we can move on and start posting on Brighteon again. I really prefer Brighteon. I don't like YouTube at all. It's just sort of I feel like all the social media, for me anyway, is just a necessary evil. It's nothing I actually want to participate in. I participate in Twitter the absolute most, I guess, because it's the easiest to deal with, in my humble opinion. I pretty much just post the shows and the show links on Facebook and Twitter as well. Again, that gets kind of the most of my attention. Most of my attention is going to this program and the family and daughter and job and all that good stuff. But Twitter gets a little attention as well. So please check out that link and share it with your friends. Also, again, if you're new to the game, you can download all this stuff from iTunes. You can look on the right-hand side of my page and you can download the Android app, the iPhone app. You can sign up for the newsletter. You can send me an email. And most importantly to me, you can make a donation over there on the bottom right too. Every little bit helps. I'm not kidding. So if you want to only donate $5, thanks for the $5. The last few months have gotten very expensive in my Anomic Age anyway. A lot of back-end stuff going on. Excuse me for kicking the camera. A lot of back-end stuff going on to, we won't get into it, but suffice it to say, it's been a lot of quan being spent on the Anomic Age. So feel free to share, like the links, and donate if you are able. It's always good. I mean, you get a whole a good 2 hours worth each week. Depending on the guests, some of our guests have gone way over that. I'm never one to pull the reins back on the guests. I feel like if the guest has something they want to say, they absolutely have a great platform to do it. And I'm kind of more likely to let you talk than not. I'm not going to pull the old interrupting. I'll play my cards to the vest. I'm not going to interrupt quite a bit. Not much interruptions and not much... than the guests. I try to let the guests really have the platform more than me. You can hear me talk anytime. Anyway, enough being said. Enough on that. We have a great guest coming up later in the program as well. But, as usual, the news is just insane. I really do feel like it's a ramping up going on. It has to be. There's no other real explanation for it. I had a kind of fun experience today. I don't want to call it too fun because I had to spend like $300 and some today on my car. But I kept having a tire sensor issue, so I took that to get fixed. I'm not really one to eat out a heck of a lot, especially at the cancer GMO ridden kind of joints. But I did today. It was one of those times where the auto garage place I take my car to was pretty close to I won't give the name, but we'll just say a pretty well-known place that has breakfast. So I went in there, and I'm always pretty much to myself. I'm not a real big interactor, to be honest. When I'm out and about with people, I'm usually quite disgusted and just irritated, so I'm trying to be nice. That's kind of my try to be nice. I'm having this internal dialogue. Be nice. Don't be crazy. Like, it's okay. They're damaged for the most part. They don't know what's going on. Like, you can't help everyone. Try to help yourself. And if you can, just sprinkle a little knowledge. Throw some thought grenades out there, and maybe people will think. You know, that sort of thing. That's kind of how I operate when I mingle with people. But today was kind of different. I went into this well-known breakfast establishment. It's a national, international thing. Anyway, so I was in there, and I'm just kind of keeping to myself, eating my breakfast. And I'm just sort of soaking it all in. I feel like that's my usual role, though. I'm always just soaking in all the information around me and just kind of memory banking the whole thing. Like, you know, it's like this constant dialogue. I was actually sitting there reading some documents for a guest that's coming up in a few weeks, because I need to correspond back with him some more. And I was sitting there reading and just soaking it all in. And for once, I wasn't disgusted. It was what you might expect at this sort of eating establishment, sort of late morning. And it was a lot of older clientele. But they were just sort of talking about life. And it was really refreshing to see and hear people interacting and talking again. It was beautiful. I kind of wanted to chime in, but I really didn't have anything to add to what they were saying. I was kind of banking the information, but it was good. It was nice to see people not on their stupid device, sitting there playing with their idiot device, you know. Nobody was doing that. I mean, it was people at several different tables, and they were just talking to each other, and they were just being humans. And it was so refreshing. I mean, it was a lot of different folks interacting. You could tell, and you know, from a lot of different walks of life, and they were talking about gardening and just vital things that people used to do. And I was hearing a lady talk about her grandmother and how she lived to be 100 and something, and two or three other people like, oh, my mom and grandmother lived to be 99 or 102 and so forth and so on. And it was so refreshing, but I was taking it all in because, you know, without knowing me or without really knowing what was going on, they were telling me what we need to be doing. They were saying, oh, my grandmother gardened every day, and she ate everything pretty much right out of the garden. She didn't go to any fast food joint or eat a bunch of chips or any of this stuff. I mean, they didn't know I was there. I wasn't obviously chiming in or saying, oh, you guys are right. I can't believe there's smart people around me. But they were validating and substantiating what I and I think everyone else intrinsically already knows, that the way people lived 50, 60, 100 years ago was the way you're supposed to live. They were growing their own food. They were gardening. They were outside being vital, and they were living longer. The gentleman that was talking next to me, it was a kind of older black man, was saying the same thing. It's like everyone there was reading my mind. It was beautiful and amazing. And the black guy was saying, yeah, you know, back then nobody had all this fast food. They didn't go eat chips, and everybody lived and was healthy. And it was just such a different time. And they were talking about gardening tips and what they used on their tomatoes. And the guy was saying, yeah, I don't even eat the store-bought stuff. And I wanted to chime in and say, good, because it's got cancer in it. It's been spliced with things to make it genetically modified. It's like a cancer time bomb. You're eating these little red cancer bombs. I didn't even get into it. I just took it all in. But nonetheless, it was very refreshing. I felt good and somewhat invigorated. Not that I had to pay a bunch of money for my car, but at least I felt, wow, I'm interacting with people. Not directly, I'm at least taking in their knowledge and getting something positive out of the situation. So that was very nice. And sort of without fail, my brain was doing the binary opposition, and my brain thought, remember a few weeks ago when you had that other weird interaction in another store? And again, it was just me taking in information, but a couple weeks ago, heck, it might have been a month ago. It's so weird, that whole quickening thing, because my brain always thinks, and that was a few weeks ago. Heck, I think it was like 2 months ago. 2 months ago, I was in one of those big, everything's healthy stores. You know, the kind that doesn't allow you to have weapons inside, but nonetheless, I was in one of those places. And for once, I wasn't with my daughter. I'm almost always with my daughter when I'm out and about running errands. So much so that I miss her so much when she's not there. And it's so bizarre because I feel like a celebrity when I'm out with my kids. My kid, excuse me, my daughter. And when I'm not there, the checkout people are like, was she all right? Is she missing? Like, she good? And anyway, I was there and I had just a few things in my hand. I didn't even have a cart or a basket. And there was a guy in front of me. And as usual, I wasn't really communicating. I was just soaking it in, like the weird little anthropologist that I am. I was just soaking it in, you know. But the guy was talking to the checkout girl, and I don't even know how the heck this got brought up, but the guy was talking about his own children or something to the effect, and that he had two girls, and the checkout lady was saying, oh, I have a girl, I believe, maybe two. I can't recall the details, but anyway, like a good social justice warrior that's been indoctrinated by the state, this guy, within the conversation, just tosses out some little nuggets of indoctrination. So he's like, oh yeah, you know, I hear there's so much, so many more women being born now, so many more females. I mean, right away he's a sexist for even saying that there's a female gender or sex. Excuse me, it's sex. It's not a gender, dolts. But anyway, right away he's a bigot for saying that. But anyway, he goes on to say, oh yeah, there's so many more females being born now, and something effective. That's probably a good thing. It's time that the women get in charge and take over and something to that effect. And he kind of looks at me, you know, as he's saying this, kind of with a smile, like I'm going to validate his comments and say, you're right, buddy. I'm so glad the women are going to take over. Yeah, the men have screwed stuff up. That's what he said. He said, the men have screwed stuff up long enough. Maybe the women can fix everything. That's what he said. And then he looked at me for validation, like I was going to give him some, like, ooh, some high five. I'm so glad. But I didn't. I just sort of stood there and looked at him like, wow. I thought to myself, this could be a teaching moment, but in my humble opinion, most people are beyond help. So I don't even waste my time. And I didn't that day either. I just sort of stored it in the old memory bank for later. And I thought, man, it's so sad. Instead of saying, oh, you know, it'd be great if men and women could work together to solve all the problems those created by the communists. No, it was, oh, maybe the women can fix all the problems that these men folk have caused over the years without their patriarchy. Oh, yeah. So there was that. Anyway, enough of me yammering. Let's get into some news bits, shall we? We got a lot of news to get into at that. Here we go. And I peppered in an old article just for fun, too. This one coming from Pamela Geller, April 29th, 2019, from the GellerReport.com. Arizona Muslim honor murders his wife and two daughters, says Allah, told him to do it. Oh boy. He said that the reason he shot these individuals is because, in God's eyes, it was all right for him to deal with someone in this manner who had been involved in adultery, extramarital affairs. Oh boy. So, apparently Smith was trying to cleanse his family's honor, which is done by killing the offender. And there will be much, much more of this in America. Muslims commit 91% of honor killings worldwide. Well, I should expect so. I mean, what? They're the ones that have this idiotic honor killing nonsense, right? I don't think, like, Baptists don't have an honor killing. What about the Hindus? Honor killing? Hindus in the audience? I don't think so. So let's move on a little bit. I'm just sort of getting silly here. The Palestinian Authority gives pardons or suspend sentences for honor murders. Iraq women have asked for tougher sentences for Islamic honor murders who get off lightly now. Syria, in 2009, scrapped a law limiting the length of sentences for honor killings. But the new law says a man can still benefit from extenuating circumstances and crimes of passion or honor, provided he serves a prison term of no less than 2 years in the case of killing. Anyway, so this is just more of the same. This is more of what you might be expecting here. Here we go. This is the old article I mentioned just a moment ago. This is from November 1st, 2008. I've been sort of doing this for the last few weeks, just sort of throwing in an old article because people don't seem to get it, and I want people to re-grasp, reconnect to the insanity that's going on. This is coming from the Associated Press from Rachel Deor. November 1st, 2008, Anchorage Shelter seeks to exclude transgender people. Oh, no. A faith-based woman's homeless shelter in Anchorage is suing to block the city from requiring it to accept transgender women, which it said would violate its religious beliefs. Okay, well, imagine that. So you're a woman. You're in Alaska, so it's bound to be a little chilly, I'm guessing. You make your way to the homeless shelter, and you're expecting, okay, well, this is a safe spot for me that I can just be in this homeless shelter, sleep quietly, peacefully, with at the very least other women, and not have to worry about a man sleeping next to me and rolling over on me or trying to put the moves on me, that sort of thing. So you would think that would be just a normal thing, but no. No, not here in Land of the Sheep, Home of the Slave, not a chance. Here in Land of the Sheep, Home of the Slave, they are going to force men upon you. Oh, wait, they're transgendered. I forgot. Oh, so that's different. Totally different situation. So they wouldn't do anything like that. I mean, it's happened time and time again in restrooms across the country now since they've enacted these absurd laws. But no way it would happen in a woman's shelter. 2018, let's move on. This is coming from Breitbart. California restaurants charging 1% global warming tax. Oh, boy. Now we're getting into some fun. Let's see. This is by Warren Houston. An initiative among restaurants in California will charge customers a 1% tax to combat global warming. That's good. The Restore California Renewable Restaurants Movement will attempt to force customers to pay a little extra to grow a public fund that will supposedly be used to reduce carbon emissions, supposedly being the operative word there. The fund will reportedly pay farmers $10 per ton of carbon emissions they eliminate from their operations, according to The Hill. Well, that sounds reasonable. I mean, so we got this going on in California where they're going to start charge you every restaurant a 1% carbon tax. And granted, that's kind of the least they could do. They always roll this mess out in this innocuous fashion. Well, you're just paying 1%. Oh, and then again, you're just paying 2%. In a couple of years, you're just paying 5%. And then in a few more years, you're going to pay 25%. It's going to go on and on and on. This is kind of akin to that restaurant, I believe it was in Australia, that was in the news last week, where they were charging males some sort of gender tax in this coffee shop. I mean, the insanity just never ends, folks. So in the coffee shop, I guess you got charged, if you were male, a special tax. And in California, it doesn't matter. There's an equal opportunity destroyer, so they'll charge you some for the environment. And a lot of people, I mentioned this months ago, and I think a lot of people just didn't get it or believe me on this one. So I pulled up the article. I could talk about it. So, I mean, I guess they're charging you this special environmental Nazi tax in California since Al Gore couldn't get his carbon taxes rammed through here in the States. And I mentioned that this all goes back to Blood and Gore, which is a corporation by Al Gore here. And if you're following along with the add-on version of the game, November 3rd, 2013, this is from Forbes.com, Blood and Gore making a killing on anti-carbon investment hype. Surprise, Al Gore and his carbon credit hookstring partner David Blood, both principals at Generation Investment Management, GIM, warn in their October 30 Wall Street Journal op-ed of peril to fossil fuel investments due to the coming carbon asset bubble. Yeah, we were all supposed to be underwater 10 years ago, Al. We're not. Anyway, so people, just in case you think this is all just me making stuff up, yes, if they were to have pulled off their carbon credit scam, the monies would go to Blood and Gore. Yeah, the one I just mentioned there, Blood and Gore, these two people. So your carbon credit money would go to these clowns. So if you just tithe enough to the gods in the environmental movement, somehow it's going to magically make your environmental crisis go away. Oh well, let's move on. Oh, we got so much more. I don't know if we're going to get into all this today or not. Here we go. This is coming from Voice of Europe. It's by Emma R. Hungary. The EU has provided 2 million migrants with unlawful cash cards worth 1.55 billion with a B euros in an effort to legalize illegal immigration. My brain had a moment there. Over 2 million migrants have received anonymous debit cards at a cost of 1.55 billion, according to the Hungarian government. Guess who's paying for it? You guessed it. The people in the EU. That's the people that are paying for it. Oh, let me see. Chief Security Advisor to the Prime Minister, Goyerg Bakondi. I'm sorry if I'm mispronouncing that. Bakondi. Said to the Hungarian M1 television. I wasn't just going to read that again. He was just giving you the same headline that I already reread there. Mr. Bakondi said that these cards are unlawful, you think? Because European citizens cannot own anonymous banking cards. They cannot be monitored, and no public procurement procedure was launched for their issuing. Oh man, it just goes on and on. I won't read the whole thing to you, but the broad strokes of this is, they're giving cash money cards to migrants coming up from those lovely places in North Africa and the Fertile Crescent. And the people of the European Union are paying for it with their tax money. That's no big deal. They'll be a bigot. Just accept the love. This is coming from thedailycaller.com. This is from Rachel Stoltzfus, staff reporter. FBI investigation of Antifa for plotting to buy guns from cartel for armed rebellion. To be honest, I kind of just stopped at the headline on this one because it said FBI investigating Antifa. So if you know anything about the FBI, they're usually the ones running the KKK, Antifa, white supremacist groups, that sort of thing. That's the FBI. That's who's running those operations. So people always have this this mystique of the Klan from like the 30s or the 40s or something, you know, back when Senator Byrd, Hillary Clinton's longtime love, you know, her love, at least, I know she's not into guys, but at least her love, I guess mentally. So, Senator Byrd gave a little speech at his death and all that stuff. Anyway, a lot of people still have this mystique of, oh, the Klan is like the Klan from 100 years ago. No, it's not. It's these stupid little isolated pockets of idiots that are primarily backed and ran and funded by the FBI. That's it. So right away when I see the FBI investigating Antifa, I immediately think, well, that's a lot like Hillary investigating herself. That's like the FBI investigating itself. So, you know. And if you haven't caught up to this, the FBI are absolutely the ones that are responsible for all kinds of fun stuff. Let me think back. The Oklahoma City bombing, they had connections there. Let me see. Waco, remember when all those men, women, and children were murdered and burned to death? Yeah, they had a lot of connections to how that went down. They had the tanks with the fire on the end of them. They were shooting at people from helicopters. They tried to raid it once and then got their stuff handed to them. And they had to raid it again, in which case they went in and burned and blew the place up. What else are we forgetting here? Good old Randy Weaver at Ruby Ridge. They blackmailed him and tried to set him up on a gun charge, and we didn't play along. Then they came to his house. They shot his dog. They shot his wife. They shot his son, and they shot him. He lived. The other aforementioned, not so much. That's the FBI. The same FBI that got the underwear bomber on the plane. Remember that little fiasco, the underwear bomber? He was some mentally ill wind-up toy, as usual, the false flags that they kind of always pull. So they had this mentally ill guy that was hardly conscious, and he couldn't get on the plane until some FBI folks came and flashed some badges and forced him on to the plane. So that's the FBI that's going to be investigating this. Let's move on. Oh, what do we got from the Gateway Pundit? Black Monday, South African farmers demonstrate outside U.S. Embassy to bring awareness to the epidemic of farm attacks and murders. This is from Jim Hoft, April 29th, 2019. It just goes on, doesn't it, folks? Demonstrate at the U.S. Embassy in Pretoria Monday, April 29th, to raise awareness of the epidemic of farm attacks and murders. There were 13 farm attacks and 3 gruesome murders over Easter weekend alone. I highly recommend everyone read this. I'm just going to give you my synopsis of it. If you don't know anything about these farm attacks, you really need to check it out and maybe look into it just a bit, because what's going on in South Africa is not what you think is going on in South Africa. It's quite clearly the black folks that are now in charge of South Africa are committing genocide against the white farmers in South Africa. And when I say they're committing genocide, I don't mean they're just lining up in a pit and shooting them a la the World War II Nazi era stuff. Nay. Way more gruesome activities are going on than that, folks. I mean, we're talking about absolutely dismembering people. We're talking about raping people to death. We're talking about, what do they call it, necklacing, where they tie a tire or put a tire around someone's neck, fill it with petrol, and light it on fire. We're talking about the most heinous stuff that you could possibly imagine. I wouldn't even get into any more, but it's far more gruesome than I am telling you. What I'm telling you is just the beginning. And you really need to look into what's going on in South Africa. It is absolutely a racial genocide of the white farmers. That's all it is. There's nothing more, there's nothing less. That's what it is. And the mainstream media is not covering it because there's a war on everything white, just as there's the war on everything heterosexual, just as it's a war on everything normal in any shape, form, or fashion, just as it's a war on anything conservative, just as it's a war on anything that's the family, just as it's a war on anything Christian. So they're not going to cover the genocide of the white farmers in South Africa. And I don't hear anyone clamoring to bring them here as refugees either. I don't hear anyone clamoring for us to go to South Africa and do anything like everyone's wanting us to do in Venezuela. Nope. Nobody seems to care. Why, I ask? I don't know. I won't answer that question for you. I'll just pose it. Let's move on. FoxNews.com. Tyler McCarthy, Sports Illustrated swimsuit model, Halima Aden. Oh, how beautiful. I'm so excited. Makes history as first woman to pose in hijab and burkini. Oh, that's just nauseating. Oh, boy. The Somali-American model previously made history at 19 years old by competing in the Miss Minnesota USA pageant as the first person to ever wear a hijab and burkini during the show. Oh, boy. Oh, there's no need to read much more of this garbage. This is exactly what you think it is. It's Minnesota, as I've said before, a state that is gone. Remove their federal funding, take off their flag from the United States flag. It's gone. Their star, excuse me, from the flag. Minnesota's gone. They're just a pre-caliphate state in the former Republic of the United States. That's all that is. They might not be fully caliphate yet. They're just waiting for everybody to ease into it. Just much like you would turn the water up on that boiling frog in the hot water. That's all they're doing. And that's all this is. This is just more acclamation by the Muslims to get everybody in America, which is so stupid, and so worried that they might get called racist or Islamophobic. They're so worried about what someone's going to call them. They're not going to stand up against the infiltration, overthrow, and invasion of this country by the Muslims to turn it into a caliphate state. That's their expressed intent. Not my words. But, you know, keep being pathetic, weak, nobodies, and see how that goes. Let's move on. Charlottesville, Virginia. Charlottesville judge rules Lee Jackson statues are war memorials. This is coming from NBC29.com. Let me see. Reported by Pete DeLuca, edited by John Early. A judge has ruled that the Confederate statues in downtown Charlottesville are officially protected under state law. Well, this guy is a racist bigot. What a pathetic bigot. Judge Richard Moore ruled that the statues of Robert E. Lee and Thomas Stonewall Jackson are war memorials and therefore cannot be removed by the city without permission from the state. Wow, this guy must be in the Klan or some other neo-Nazi hate group, because everybody knows you tear down everything that you don't agree with. If it's historic, you just tear it down. That way the next generations won't even know about it, and you can just tell them whatever story you want. All this stems from a lawsuit against both current and former city councilors who voted to remove these two Confederate statues back in 2017. Oh, well, here in North Carolina, they just allow them to remove it and not do anything about it. Or in, like they did in Texas, they removed it in the dark of night, so no one would do anything about it either. And no one did do anything about it because most of the American populace is pathetic worms who refuse to rise up or do anything even remotely like having a spine. Not calling for violence, but a spine is always nice. What else we got here? Let me see. Huh. I don't know where the heck we left off. Here we go. Oh, this is from CNN, so it's got to be true. Even Snopes will verify that CNN is, you know, as close to manna from heaven as you can get here on Earth. FBI, we have a terror recruiting problem in Minnesota. Andrew Luger, the U.S. attorney for Minnesota, comments on the arrest of six individuals on terror charges. It's got a little video if you want to waste time. Listen to this boob. So the bottom line is, Minnesota, you don't have a terror problem. It's kind of like when you have these truck attacks or these knife attacks You're leaving out the elephant in the room. It's not a terror problem. It's a Muslim problem. Plain and simple, Minnesota. You've allowed your state to be taken over. It's not coming back. The people of Minnesota, nor the people of the United States, they don't have the temerity to take it back. So Minnesota's gone. So you don't have a terror problem. You have a Muslim problem. That would be the problem. The terror is part of their religion. It's part of what Allah says. So, there you go. Let's move on. Let's see what this is. And let me see. NBC News. I was about to say ABC. NBCNews.com. From the health and wellness area. Stuck on the sidelines. Oh, have mercy. A transgendered powerlifter fights for the right to compete. Fight for your right to compete, young man. It is not fair to genetically eliminate an entire group of people, says J.C. Cooper. You got to see the spelling of this. You know this is a millennial idiot because the name is stupid. And it's spelled idiotic. Oh, boy. Who was barred from USA powerlifting competitions? I guess J.C. is trying to pass himself off as a female. He's got little braided hair and everything. Oh, this is from Alex Berg, B-E-R-G. I'm sorry, I left you out there, Alex. April 28, 2019. The first time J.C. Cooper walked out onto the platform at a woman's powerlifting competition, everything else fell away. Her years-long internal struggle over her gender identity, her decisions to leave men's sports when she began transitioning, her doubts that she would ever feel safe if she returned to competitions. Well, that's cute, Jay, but you're a guy, and you're competing in a women's powerlifting competition. I don't know what else to say. I'll just leave it there. I mean, anyone with logic can see the insanity in that. So let's just move on. Here we go. The Epoch Times. This is some more goodies from the formerly great state of North Carolina. This is from April 26th, 2019, by the Associated Press. Two dos personas. Too guilty for toppling North Carolina campus's Confederate statue. Oh, boy. Hillsborough, North Carolina. Two men face a day in jail after being found guilty of rioting, damaging property, and defacing a Confederate monument that had stood for a century on the campus of North Carolina's flagship public university. Oh, yes, the great state of North Carolina. In my opinion, a formerly great state, their flagship university, UNC. Sure, they've had all kinds of scandals with cheating athletes, but it doesn't seem to matter because they're still the flagship and everybody still wants to send their little boys and girls to the great Tar Heel flagship state. The News and Observer of Raleigh reports that the state district court judge on Thursday found Raul Arce Jimenez and Sean Bitchfield Finn Jimenez guilty in the toppling of the University of North Carolina's monument nicknamed Silent Sam. They were assessed a $500 fine and community service. I guess they also got what? Let me reread this top here. A day in jail. Okay. Faced a day in jail. So instead of that day in jail, I guess they got the $500 fine and community service. Well, that makes sense. Oh, boy. Sometimes you just don't have words, you know? But now's not that time. I'm so disgusted with our state, the state of North Carolina, and I'm so completely disgusted with the people of the state because they continue to send their, as I said again, their sons and daughters to the cult of academia, the capital of the cult in our state being UNC. Oh, the great UNC. So let me guess, these two clowns got the $500 and a little community service. So what I want to know is what happened to the dean who knew about this quote-unquote demonstration going on? So he knew about this and didn't do jack about it. What about that? What about the professor that was one of the main people instigating and leading this quote-unquote protest? What about him? I'm guessing he's still got a job. He's sure as bleep not in jail. And what about the police that stood down? And from what I read in previous articles, they stood down because the university told them to stand down. I don't get it. I don't get it at all. So what happened to all those three? So the police should be fired and charged for allowing it to go on. The dean should be also fired and charged for allowing this to go on. And the professor should be charged and also fired for instigating, being involved in, and all the other mess that was going on here. But none of that went down at all. And the most funny part of it all is none of that happened, and people are still clamoring to get into this institution of higher learning. I just don't get it. I don't get it at all. I get mad at myself because I say that kind of stuff. I do get it. I get it 110%. I know why, and I know what the problem is. It just, I guess it still just disgusts me to the core what the people in this state and this country are allowing to happen. Let's move on. Gateway Pundit again. This is from our friend Jim Hoft. April 29th, 2019, NCAA champions UVA, the University of Virginia, declines White House invitation following Dem-supported petition. Oh, have mercy. The University of Virginia defeated Texas Tech to win the NCAA 2019 championship this year, but the Virginia team won't be going to the White House. The team declined their invitation to meet with President Trump. The University of Virginia announced this decision on Friday. Oh, boy. This came after a petition was signed by more than, looks like 5,000, more than 5,000 times. I don't know if that's a typo or what, urging the team to decline the invitation. The petition was signed, was supported by Democrats on campus. Well, that's cute. So you got 5,000 signatures, and all of a sudden the team loses its collective testes. I mean, somewhere the founder of Virginia, Thomas Jefferson, is rolling over in his proverbial grave, I believe. But again, this isn't surprising. This is kind of what you should expect from the people like that. Last one, and we got to go here. Even George Washington may be erased from our past. A mural in San Francisco, which dates from 1936, is assailed because it traumatizes students. Oh, I have mercy. No! Oh, man. Fergus M. Bordewick, April 26th, 2019. A San Francisco mural has become the latest high-profile target of self-appointed censorship by those who want to erase both history and art of which they disapprove. That's right, folks. All art is equal, but some art is more equal than others. I mean, if you got a jar of urine with the crucifix in it, that's art. That's fine. If you got some of that, I can't remember his actual name, Jack the Dripper art, that just silly nonsense where you just throw a bunch of color on a canvas. That's art. Come on, you bigot. But if you actually have an artistic rendering of George Washington from 36? That's not okay. Because that art depicts slaves. It depicts a dead Native American, if you read on in the article. And that offends people and upsets people and blah, 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 blah. Guess what, folks? I'm offended daily. Every time I leave the house. Why do you think I try not to interact with many people when I leave the house? And just sort of self-isolate because I'm so disgusted almost every minute of every day when I'm forced to interact with the other humans. On rare occasion, it's like, holy cow, I'm with another person that's not a complete dober-dober? This is crazy. But I don't know. What are you going to do? Well, what we're going to do is we're going to talk with our guest in just a mere matter of moments. Mr. Dale Smith will be with us in just a matter of moments. I'm trying to chill out and cool myself off a little bit before we talk to our guest. So, stick around, and in a mere matter of moments, we will be joined by Dale Smith. We'll talk about a lot of stuff. Today, we are pleased to welcome onto the program Mr. Dale Smith. He is a 55-year-old electromechanical tech with 30 years of manufacturing experience and a writer on the blogosphere since 2000. Dale had his first inkling that things were not the way he thought they were when he delved into the Oklahoma City bombing. After listening to an interview with Jana Davis and reading her book, The Third Terrorist, Dale knew that the reality presented before us was not as it appeared to be. A chance encounter led him to meet Brigadier General Benton Parton in August of 2004. Dale later had dinner with the general and his wife at Fort Belvoir in Alexandria, Virginia, where he explained to him how the Alfred P. Murrow Federal Building actually came down and what happened to him after he tried to expose it. Since then, Dale has continued to research and uncover more information on a variety of topics. He also helped to found the Facebook group Meet at the Shade Tree, where like-minded individuals can share and explore a range of topics. Thank you, Dale, for being on the program.
Thank you, John. It's a real pleasure to be here, and I love your work. It is extremely good. You are a natural at this.
Thank you, sir.
And I don't know, that's quite a coup of some of the guests that you've had on. Mind-blowing. Great job of researching and having the tenacity to get these people on. So kudos to you, and you have a really good show. We can start with the Oklahoma City bombing. I figured out after reading Jana Davis's book, and I started going back through what we were told initially, and then when the feds came in, they changed the narrative totally. The people on the ground that were actually there, the Oklahoma City reporters, they got it right. The feds came in and changed everything. And I ended up meeting Brigadier General Benton Parton in Alexandria, Virginia. I had talked to him on the phone, and that's a funny story in itself. As I was doing my research, I found Benton Parton's bio, and it had his phone number on it.
Wow.
So I just called it, and I'll be dang if he didn't pick up the phone himself.
That's freaking.
But just one of the most incredible, kind, down-to-earth people you'll ever meet. And so we talked several times on the phone, and it just so happens for work, I had to go up to the D.C. area and around Alexandria, Virginia, and I called him up and said, hey, if you get a day next week, I said, I'd love to take you and your wife to dinner. I'd love to meet you and talk with you more. And he says, well, if you can make it up here, I'll take you to Fort Belvoir. We have steak night every Thursday night.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah. So I went up to Fort Belvoir. We sat in this beautiful dining hall. It was a really cool place. And, you know, General Benton Parton wasn't just a military man. He had 4 or 5 PhDs. Hmm. He was... Yeah, I would say his IQ was probably in the 180s, 190s. Half the time, the stuff he was talking about was so far over my head. But there was quite a few things that I understood. And he explained to me that an ampho bomb could not cause that type of damage to the Murrow Building, and that the reason why they put fuselages back together when a plane explodes is they can tell what type of explosive was used to bring it down. Mm-hmm. So he said every explosion leaves its own signature. So what happened was he was called down there to look at it. He was the same guy that they sent to Lebanon when the Marines were killed in 83. Because he's an expert. He's an expert in explosives. Mm-hmm. And so he said that as an ampho bomb explodes, as it hits its target, the debris hits the target, it loses pounds per square inch. So as it hit the building and was going up, it was losing pounds per square inch, but he said they found powderized rebar and concrete that was concrete encased up on the top floors. which is impossible with an info bomb. Then you have the testimony of the people that said that they heard two explosions, and then you have that verified by the seismic readings in Norman, Oklahoma, and also in Tulsa. They're showing two distinct different explosions, like seconds apart. So that was a big thing to me, was to get to meet him. And what they did to him, he said that I can tell you right now that on the second and fourth floors of the columns on each side, there were secondary explosive devices. That's what caused this. And they also found three other bombs that were unexploded. And this can be verified by FEMA reports. So anyway, he said, this is what you guys need to do to really investigate and find out what really happened. And they shook his hand off. Thank you very much, General Parton. We'll take it under advisement. But then they kept adding the amount of ANFO. First it was 2,400, then it was 32, and then it was 4,800 pounds of ammonium nitrate. And people think that making ammonium nitrate is simple as putting some fertilizer and some oil together. Mm-hmm. It's a very complicated process. And plus the type of ammonium nitrate that you can get is only 90%. So that complicates the formula even more. So when he saw what they were doing, he started speaking out. And he was very adamant that the people in Oklahoma City were not getting the justice they should have gotten. And so he started going around and speaking. And he drew the ire of the federal government, or especially the deep state. And they tried to shut him up. They went to him and said, you know, you were on some appropriations committees, you know, and maybe we'll look into your financial records. And basically, he felt like they were going to try to set him up, saying he took bribes or he took kickbacks or something. But the guy's honest above reproach, and he says, bring it. Bring anything you got. And such an incredible patriot. He had a home out in Alexandria. It was right across from the old George Washington place. Just beautiful place. And as we were taking pictures and saying goodbye, he said, you know, the biggest lie that the American people have ever been told is that communism is dead.
Yeah.
And I was back in 2004, and I was still believing all the stuff about what really happened on 9/11 and how there was this big war against the Middle East. Now, I kept looking for this angle that maybe this was caused by Muslim extremists, but that didn't turn out to be the case at all. I mean, that was not what it was about. And there were some things he wanted to tell me, but he knew I wasn't ready yet. I wasn't ready to hear what he had to say. But I stayed in touch with him for a while as I started going down this road. And then I couldn't get a hold of him anymore. So I found his son on Facebook, and I sent him a message. I said, I just wanted to let you know that I got to meet your dad, one of the most incredible men I've ever met in my life. And next time you talk to him, say, you know that guy, Dale Smith? Say, he gets it now.
Yeah.
He gets it. We're trying to tell him. And, he was just such an incredible guy. He's going through Alzheimer's. He's 91 or so years old, and it's heartbreaking for his son. But tell you what, his son told me, I'm glad my dad, over the last 6-7 years, he hasn't been able to really see what has become, especially the last 3 or 4 years. I mean, the rise of the end. I mean, remember when the Democratic Party used to run from the word socialist? Now they run towards it.
That's
and
right.
Now they're it won't be long before communism. You know, I'm a socialist Democrat, and then it'll be I'm a communist Democrat. I mean, but these people are totalitarian, and all of this rush to the border is all being set up by people like George Soros and his NGOs that are sponsoring these people to come over here. And they're trying to implement the Clive Piven strategy.
Oh, yeah.
Flood the system, bring it down, and then from there they'll rebuild it into this communist utopia that they believe could happen here. And it's mind-blowing. But here's the thing, that the left, the far left, they're actually doing the work of the very people they claim to be fighting against, the upper crust, the oligarchs, the robber barons. And they're being used like a crack whore.
That's the truth.
But I'm serious. They're being worked like a crack. And they don't even know it. That is what is so sad about this whole thing.
That's what I was referencing last week. I think I was comparing it to pimps and hoes, the way that a lot of these different schools and organizations take all this federal money, but they don't get the hook that's in there. They got to do what the feds say, or the feds will start saying, oh, we're going to take your funding if you don't push the LGBT, Muslim, you know, social justice warrior agenda and so forth.
Yeah, there's always strings attached when the government's involved. So, you know, I always tell people, I'm not taking credit for this, but a government powerful enough to give you everything that you want is also powerful enough to take it away. So, you know, remember that. When you're living in mommy and daddy's house, their rules apply.
That's the truth, man. Absolutely. Can you tilt your camera down just a hair? It's cutting a little bit of your head off down there.
See. Do I need to...
That's all right. There you go. That's perfect. Now I can see your head.
Okay, cool.
Yeah,
there ain't a whole lot to see up here. That's fine.
Yeah, I talked to a Special Forces guy a couple years back from Camp Lejeune, and he was older and retired, but I don't even know how we got off on the AMFO bomb thing, except that Special Forces guys love to talk about blowing stuff up. But he was talking to me about that, and you know, he was referencing what you were saying, like you can't even get that much fertilizer or the ammonium nitrate within the fertilizer anymore, you know, but he didn't tell me that it was hogwash, but he sort of alluded to the fact that the original story of Oklahoma City seemed a little far-fetched from ammonium nitrate.
Exactly, and if you look at the destruction, it was like a cookie cutout.
Yeah.
And the three bombs that they actually took out of there, that FEMA took out to an open field and exploded, they were even more powerful than the two that took down columns on the left and right side.
Mm-hmm.
And another way that we know that this was not what we were told is that there was a policeman, Terry Yeeke, that had somebody pulled over. He was on the scene in 5 minutes, started pulling people out of the wreckage. If that had been an ammonium nitrate bomb big enough to cause that type of damage, you wouldn't have been able to breathe the air for at least an hour, because the after effects of the ammonium would have scalded the lungs. So we know that couldn't be right. So
yeah, I mean, that's something I think a lot of people miss. I mean, you need like a hazmat suit to go in there seconds after an explosion like that. You couldn't just walk in there, you know, general clothes and pulling people out. You'd be burned with all the chemicals.
Oh yeah, exactly. So yeah, so it was BS. And then when Terry Yeeke met a very he was found beaten to death with bruises around his wrist where handcuffs had been. And he'd been dragged from his vehicle, and he committed suicide.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so and that's anybody that believes that story, I got a bridge in Brooklyn. I'm willing to let go on the cheap. I mean, it's a buyer's market, so.
Yeah, he had all the hallmarks of the usual Clinton Arkansides. He was just a few states over, it looked like.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Oh, well, we can get into the mean Arkansas deal. I don't know if you ever followed WWF. I mean, I never was really into wrestling, but there was this wrestler named Billy Jack Haynes that has come forward and said that he was there the night those two boys were killed on the railroad tracks.
Mm-hmm.
And when they were snooping around the Mena airport, which, by the way, is wasn't under the jurisdiction of the FAA. It was a private airport, so. Anything that flew in there and flew out was not under FAA rules. And there was, you know, when in a small town, rumors get out, hey, man, there's some weird stuff going on at the Mena airport. And so these kids were sniffing around there, and they got a little too close, and they met the wrong people on the wrong night. And Billy Jack Haynes said that the beating those two boys took was just absolutely brutal. He was there as to be protected because they didn't know exactly who it was that was sneaking around there for sure.
Yeah.
And it was very, very nasty. And then the story was that they got stoned and they laid down on the railroad tracks and fell asleep. I know that when I'm tired, the first place I'm looking for, and you know, if I'm out in the middle of nowhere, I'm going to lay on some uncomfortable railroad tracks and fall asleep, you know, and hope a train doesn't come by. That's just me.
Yeah, that whole story, as well as the Yeeke story, just seemed totally implausible. Because I think Yeeke had had some evidence or some information that he was going to bring forth, and of course that never came to light. He was found.
Yeah, they had it stored, and they had him under surveillance. They had his wife under surveillance. And there was an attorney from Dallas that was also involved. They died in a very mysterious plane crash. Mm-hmm. They had people that the grand jury was never given the evidence that they asked for, and people that were very adamant about getting this evidence, they were kicked off the grand jury. Jeez. And nobody could ever place Tim McVeigh on the scene without saying, well, there was somebody else with him. Mm-hmm. And so they never called any witnesses to verify that McVeigh was there, because his defense attorney would have said, and who else was there?
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it was a total cover up. There was a really good documentary, and all the stuff that was in the documentary, I had learned from years of reading about it, but it's called A Noble Lie. If anybody gets a chance to watch that, that is probably one of the best documentaries about the Oklahoma City bombing that there is.
Yeah, I agree. That's a great one.
It is very, very good. Also, some people that work within the federal government and people that work within the Oklahoma state government also gave them information because they wanted to see the truth come out. Of course, they steered them in directions. They didn't so much come forward because, you know, people have a tendency to disappear when you cross the federal government. So, but yeah, I would highly recommend that documentary.
Yeah, it's weird how hard it is to get some of those. I've tried to get a backlog of old VHS documentaries. My wife and I were moving recently, and I was like, no, we're still keeping that VHS player. Like, I'm sure there's a couple more of those early 90s documentaries I can buy off eBay or something, but I've got a ridiculous library of these old ones that it seems like most people just don't even know about or want to know about. I feel like I've tried to reach out to people of that era for a lot of these incidents, and I swear I think it would be easier to find people to talk about the Kennedy assassination than to talk about stuff that happened 25 years ago right now.
Yeah, because people are scared. You know, people are intimidated.
There's
so many. Yeah, the deep state has very deep pockets, you know, and they will actually financially bankrupt you into silence if they have to. It's
that's the truth.
You know, we're little fish right now, but, I mean, if I was to ever become somebody that was, I don't say I have some note, you know, I was known, well known, that yeah, they would go to great lengths to shut me down, I'm sure. But the thing is, I use this on John's show, John B. Wells' show, which, by the way, Caravan to Midnight, I cannot recommend that show enough.
Me too.
It's John B. Wells is probably one of the best that there is. And we're like a pebble. You drop it into a pond, and eventually the waves will reach the shore. Even the smallest pebble will cause a ripple of waves. So if there's a lot of us, they can't all whack us because you're playing whack-a-mole. So if there's the more of us that are doing what you are doing, and what you're doing is very important, John. Don't ever think for a second that it's not, because it is. It's huge. If you just change one person's mind, that person will change the mind of somebody else, and on it goes, the ripple effect. So
that's it.
Most definitely.
Yeah, it's sad how many people, I feel like, don't even know about a lot of this 90s stuff. Because I still fool with Twitter and Facebook a little bit. And I'm like, where's all this, like, connecting the dots between Ruby Ridge and what happened with the Bundys and the Hammond Ranch? I was like, that's a direct parallel to me, like, where they're trying to demonize the liberty movement that's sort of smoldering here since Trump took office. I feel like they're using that same playbook from about 1992.
Exactly. And what they did at Ruby Ridge was where a lot of this pro-liberty Second Amendment movement started, and they had to find a way to squelch it. So what they did was, at Ruby Ridge, they took Randy Weaver, and they got him to saw off a shotgun. It was just, but it was an FBI plant that had him do it. And they reported him, and they said, well, we'll let you off the charges if you'll infiltrate. There was some survivalist groups up in Idaho, and there was one that was supposedly the Aryan Nation was up there, and they wanted him to infiltrate it. And no, even though he didn't agree with a lot of their views, you know, they were good people, they were survivalists, and they were people that you could depend on, you know, to learn survivalist stuff. Mm-hmm. And Randy Weaver and his family are living off the grid, and they wanted him to infiltrate it. And when he refused, they filed charges. Well, he never showed up to court. So they basically brought in a SWAT team. It was snipers, and they shot his son, killed his son, killed his wife that was holding a baby. And, it made the government look really, really bad. And so they needed to do something to try to fix their image. So they came up with the deal in Waco. Yeah, there's this radical bunch of cultists that live out in Waco in their own compound, and they've got a cache of weapons. Well, the thing was, they could have arrested Koresh at any given time. He jogged outside the compound.
Yeah.
They wanted to do a show. They brought the media along, and these weekend Rambos busted in through. As soon as Koresh opened the door, they fired shots at him. They basically, when that compound was set on fire, and make no mistake about it, it was set on fire on purpose.
That's true.
It destroyed a lot of evidence. And so, but it was all about, and then 2 years later, on that same day, you have the Oklahoma City bombing, and where Timothy McVeigh is portrayed as a white nationalist, a white supremacist, a pro-Second Amendment, anti-government guy, when he was really just sheet-dipped. He was still in the military up until not. There's pictures of him in the military, footage of him in 1993, but yet in 91 and 92, he's allegedly out. But no, he had been sheet-dipped. What they do is, they bring in, you know, we want you to work in black ops. And so what we're going to do, we just go ahead and leave the military, but you're still part of the military, but you're not, quote, technically in the military. And so he was, he'd been chipped as well. And he wasn't very happy about his orders about what he was going to be doing in Oklahoma City. Cody Snodgrass, his book, Into the Light.
That's right, that's right.
It's an incredible book. He's done some really good interviews on John B. Wells' show as well. And he gives down to the minute details of what that operation was about and how what other black ops he was involved in. And he was actually offered the job to take down the Murrah building. He's offered $500,000 up front, another $500,000 when it was done, and he'd be given the funds he needed to recruit other people to help him. And he said, "You guys have lost your mind. Because I'll do some of this stuff I've done in other countries, but I'm going to do it to my own people." And he felt like he was nearing the time of his usefulness for the deep state, the CIA. And so he became expendable, and they made his life a living hell. I mean, they tried to kill him a few times. They threw him in jail over trumped-up charges. He was in prison for a couple of years. He only felt safe about writing that book after Trump won the election, because the Clintons, they're globalists. The Clintons are globalists. They're part of the elite class in the United States. Certain families control certain parts of the United States as it comes to drug trafficking, to human trafficking, arms dealing, and they have, like, their own territories. So, and the Clintons wield a lot of power. So, after Trump won, he felt safe enough to write the book, start coming out and doing interviews. And there's no way he's making this stuff up. He can talk for 2 or 3 hours straight.
Yeah.
And I've listened to him, other people interview him, and his story never varies. It's always dead on. So,
yeah, my question would always be, like, why would they make this up? It's not helping their career. They're not making millions. If they were making up a good story, they'd be on Ellen or Oprah or some mess, peddling this $1 million piece of garbage like Clinton put out a couple months back.
Not even Alex Jones would have Cody Snodgrass on.
Oh man, what the heck?
Yeah, no. So, well, Alex Jones is part of the controlled opposition for sure. He backtracked on what happened at Sandy Hook, or as I call it, Sandy Hoax. And I've got a few thousand hours invested just in that false flag event. And I think what upset me the most wasn't that they did it, was that how poorly they tried to pull it off, as if our intelligence is so pathetic that we would figure it out. And the way that I always approach something, I look at it as I got a bunch of puzzle pieces, but I don't have the picture on the box to as a reference. So what I do is I take all the straight edge pieces and put all those together.
That's
and
work. It, yeah.
And that's the only way you can do this. So I don't have every piece of the puzzle put together, but I can already tell what the picture is going to look like. So, but I've dedicated the last 7 years, 10 to 12 hours a day, even when I'm at work. I'm listening to documentaries and lectures and PDF books that are put into, you can listen to them.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And so, and I jot down notes and then come home and vet the information. And sometimes I'll just, I, One way that you could, if you really want to do research, do bio searches of certain people, like Napolitano, Joe Biden. You know, you'll find a Jesuit connection. They all went to Jesuit schools. Georgetown University is one of the biggest Jesuit colleges in the United States. There's 20 some odd Jesuit colleges, and there's these secret societies that they have at these Ivy League schools, like Skull and Bones, Quill and Dagger, and they're all Jesuit connected. The reason why the CIA recruits out of Ivy League colleges and people that belong to these is because they know how to keep a secret. So anyway, but by doing bio searches, you can see people's background and where they're. It's another connect, because it'll lead you to another name, and you research that, and you find out how they're connected.
Yeah.
Like the one that preceded, say, somebody that was in charge of the CIA, who was, you're like, oh, John Brennan, he went to a Jesuit college, he went to Fordham, and then the one before him, well, wow, he went to a Jesuit college as well. And then you see his predecessor, and you see he went to a Jesuit college.
Yeah, and these people always get this miraculous golden parachute, like Reno, Napolitano. Obama's Chief Justice clown, Eric Holder. They always get the golden parachute. Even when they get out, they're like, oh, well, now you're the head of some university, or now you're the head of some...
Right, look at Eric Holder.
Yeah.
I mean, he went right from being from his position to working for a big bank.
Yeah.
And now he's working in the California exit movement. So, I mean, it is. They always have some place to go. James Comey, his ties to the Clinton Foundation is unbelievable. He worked for BCCI, which is a known CIA bank-friendly bank where they laundered their drug money through. HSBC, Mueller worked for them.
Mm-hmm.
They were another CIA-friendly bank that launders drug. Now, if we deposit $10,000 into an account, they're going to notify Department of Homeland Security, but yet these guys, they can deposit $4, $5, $6 million at a time, and not a single eyebrow is raised. And if they do get caught, it's just a slap on the wrist. It's a $2 or $3 million fine. It's like
these big banks that are doing the money laundering for the drugs, like Wells Fargo
and
the like. You know, instead of going to prison, they just get to pay a fine of a few million when they made several billion.
Exactly,
you know, the equivalent of a parking ticket.
Right, and with the fractional reserve banking, they only have to keep 10% of it in reserve. So they're free to. That's where the derivative market comes in. You know, they've taken that money and they've gambled with it. And so one of the reasons why the banking system is so fragile right now. If everybody was to go and get their money or try to pull out their Federal Reserve notes, because it's not really money. Money has an intrinsic value. The banks would collapse in no time. I mean, and the FDIC doesn't have maybe but 1 or 2% to cover people's deposits. So as little money in the bank as I can. The rest I pull out, and I buy silver but something that has an intrinsic value. And that's what money was supposed to be to begin with. And we can go into a whole Federal Reserve thing and the story of our enslavement happened in such slow incremental steps, but it was a system of where the ones that had the money had the gold made the rules. And the greatest what a lot of people don't know is that in 1933, our government, which is a corporate entity, it was incorporated in 1871 with the Washington, D.C. having the 10 miles jurisdiction of this corporation.
Yeah, and that freaky district, the District of Columbia, that nobody knows what the heck that is.
Yeah, well, it's a district of the Vatican, if you want to be
that's
right.
That's it.
You know? Part of it's in Virginia, part of it's in Maryland, Virgin Mary. You think that the city on seven hills, Vatican has seven hills, Washington, D.C. has seven hills.
Mm-hmm.
The Washington, D.C. flag has three stars on it. There are three city-states in the world. One of them is City of London, one of them is the Vatican, and the other one's Washington, D.C.
Yep.
Yeah, so, there's a 1 square mile within London proper. It's called the City of London. That's where all the banks are. And they all have an obelisk. Ours is called the Washington Monument, but they all have an obelisk, which is an Egyptian symbol.
That's it.
It's all set up in Freemasonry. So they're all it's all interconnected. It's a three city triad, and that's a big rabbit hole to go down. But if just to stick to how we got to this place and the financial situation that we're in, In 1913, the Federal Reserve Act was passed, but before then, in 1907 and 1910, J.P. Morgan, who was one of the banking oligarchs, one of the people that became a shareholder of the Fed, put out these rumors that certain banks were going to fail. So everybody ran to get their money. So he fulfilled the prophecy by putting this rumor out there that certain banks were going to fail. He caused them to fail because everybody went to go get their money at the same time.
Yeah.
So people were like, oh, my God, it's a Hegelian dialectic. Oh, somebody needs to do something about this.
You know, this is they create this great problem.
Cause the problem, wait for the emotional outcry, then propose a solution to the very problem you caused where you benefit from it. And whenever I do a talk at a church or I do an interview like this, I always use this joke to explain the Hegelian dialectic. There's a guy with a table. It says free chips and dip. The people come over there. They take a chip, scoop it in the dip. Take a bite and goes, oh, this tastes like crap. He goes, it is. Want to buy a toothbrush?
That's it.
The Hegelian dialectic. So anyway,
that's it.
At a meeting at Jekyll Island, these bankers got together. It was very clandestine. They didn't even use their last names when they were on the trains and stuff. And they all had alibis for why, in case the press was snooping around. And they met at Jekyll Island. They came up with this Federal Reserve plan. And they used Nelson Aldridge as a mole, who was a senator at the time, to try to push it. Well, what happened was some of the people in Congress were not so dumb, and they realized exactly they're setting up a central bank. This is what Andrew Jackson got rid of in 1930s. You're a den of vipers, and I will, by God, root you out. And he did. He killed the Federal Reserve System. We went without it, a central bank, from that point forward. So anyway, they saw through it, and so they went back. And they changed a few words in it, but it was still basically the same thing. But they had some Democrats that pushed it. And one of the bankers came out and said, oh, no, this is terrible. This will ruin us. And people, oh, well, if the bankers don't like it, it must be a good plan. So anyway, there still wasn't enough support for it. But on December 23rd of 1913, they kept just enough people back to hold a quorum. The rest were on their way home for Christmas break. And this is how cowardly these people are. They used a voice vote, not a ballot vote, so that they always had plausible deniability.
Wow.
And, yeah. So basically, we turned our banking – they're supposed to be a lender of last resort. And they printed up because we were still on the gold standard. And they were printing up money that they didn't have enough gold to back it, whereas, you know, we had our own gold, you know. And in 1933, when USA Inc. went belly up, the 1929 Depression was a cover-up for the banking oligarchs. What they did was they ran the market up. They were giving out, they threw out the line of cheap credit. And these people were buying up $100 worth of stock for $10 down. But there was a catch. If there's a margin call, they'd have to get their money right away. Well, when the market was at its highest, these banking oligarchs pulled out their profits and then did the margin call. So everybody's running to the bank to pay off their loans. And, the banks collapsed, stocks fell, and they swooped in and bought up cheap shares of corporations and unaffiliated banks for pennies on the dollar. They were guaranteeing people's deposits for pennies of what they actually had. That pennies is better than nothing.
Yeah.
And that's how the Federal Reserve was able to snap up all these banks that before were not affiliated. So yeah, it was a scam. It was the great train robbery. But that pales in comparison to 1933 when USA Inc. went bankrupt. And House Joint Resolution 192, you can look it up, and it shows that fiat currency would take the place of gold. And people were, by changing a few words in the Trading with the Enemy Act of 1917, he made all Americans enemy combatants. That's how they were compelled to turn in their gold for paper fiat currency. At the agreed upon price of $20. Now get this, not less than a year later, they bumped the price up to gold to $35 an ounce. And yes, and people were pleased. There is no gold in Fort Knox. If you believe that, then I feel sorry for you. There is no gold.
Just in case people aren't connecting these dots, I want to make this great connection between what he was talking about with the Roaring Twenties. Everything's great. The Roaring Twenties, you got, you know, the air of ragtime and everything's happy, and then the Depression hits. And I always draw this very similar connection to what we were seeing with the Clinton regime, Bill, the first time. You know, we got Clinton 1 and 2. He had 8 years in office there. And everybody always looks back and say, oh, well, Bill had the economy humming. Things were great. And I always compare it just like that to the Roaring Twenties. Yeah, things were great because he was allowing people that had no business taking out these ridiculous loans to have loans, because he was forcing the banks, once again, like the pimp and the hoe, he was saying, all right, banks, you're either going to loan out this money to these folks that have no collateral or any way to pay it back, or we're going to start playing with your funding. So the same thing. And then they're all, during the Clinton era, it's great, everything's wonderful. And then what happens? Housing bubble. Now we got all these people declaring bankruptcy, declaring, you know, foreclosing on mortgages. The housing market's flooded. Just like, you know, just like what you were saying with the Great Depression. Not to that scale, but
right. And right. And he also been a friend from the .com move, you know, where everybody was creating websites and stuff. You're going to have internet commerce. And, you know, the thing about the where the banks actually ended up benefiting from the housing bubble burst, because they got a hard asset. All they did was extend some credit. Mm-hmm. What they do when you, I know if you go into a bank and you buy a house, you buy a car, you sign what is known as a promissory note.
That's it.
Well, they monetize it. They monetize it, and they it's like your signature created that money, so they put it on the books as an asset. So say you got a car loan for 5 years, and 4 years in, you lose your job, and you've already made 4 years worth of payments from money that was created by your signature. And if you can't pay it, they come and repo the car. Now they got a hard asset that they can resell. Mm-hmm. And it's the same thing with a house. You know, you'll pay, you created that money with your signature. They monetized it, and then you pay, they charge this exorbitant amount of interest on money that you created with your signature. And then if something happens, say 20 years later down the road, it's a 30-year note and you can't make your house payment. They got all those payments without risking anything, and then they get the house as a hard asset. And it's a scam. And I was horrified when I read about this. And here's something else that happened in 1933 is we lost the loyal rights to property. And it's a kind of a long document name, but I want it. So I made a note here. Let me find it here.
Sure.
But it's a Senate document. Let's see. I had the same problem on John's show. I was trying to find this particular document. Found it. Okay, Senate Document 4373, Congress, first session, wherein it states all property of United States citizens is owned by the state. The ultimate ownership, individual so-called ownership, is only by virtue of government, i.e. law, amounting to mere user, and use must be in accordance with the law, subordinate to the necessities of the state.
Jeez.
You don't own anything.
That's it.
We had a loyal rights to property meant that you had complete outright ownership of it. But you don't have what is known as a clear title. It's a simple fee title, something like that. But you really don't own it. If you think you do, go a year without paying your property taxes. They'll come in and they'll sell the house.
That's
even
right.
If you only own a couple of thousand in property taxes, they'll sell the house. And you're not going to get, what's left over after you sold my house? You don't get it.
No.
So it's terrible.
Or if they decide to put in a highway through your house, then yes. You don't have it anymore either.
Eminent domain. And you know, they try to fight it in the courts, but it always ends up, you know, the people end up losing. Also, I don't know if you know who Colonel Mendelhaus was. He was the handler for Woodrow Wilson.
Oh, okay.
And, yeah, he basically what Woodrow Wilson said was that he was his alter ego, and he wrote out this plot in this book, Philip Drew Administrator. He wrote this under a pseudonym, but here's where the birth certificate, which was monetized up until 1933, birth certificates were not used for anything other than, and there wasn't a whole lot of them. You know, most people when they had a child, they just write their name and date they were born in the family Bible.
Mm-hmm.
But, in 1933, our labor was pledged as surety against the debt because they had the gold. Now, okay, now you've paid us back with the gold. Now what? Now what do you have for us? Well, FDR pledged our labor as surety against the debt. We became collateralized, and they printed our birth certificate on bond paper.
Mm-hmm.
And then using actuary tables, they create a value amount, basically a benchmark. And it'll rise or lower based on your income, the commerce that you produce, the taxes you pay, and other fees and stuff. But anyway, this is what Woodrow Wilson, who had a real change of heart as he left office, and he said that he regretted the Federal Reserve Act, that we were the most We were being ruled by a bunch of oligarchs. But anyway, Colonel Mendelhouse said this, I'm going to quote it, "Very soon every American will be required to register their biological property in a fictional system designed to keep track of the people that will operate under the ancient system of pledging. By such methodology, we can compel people to submit to our agenda, which will affect our security as a chargeback for our fiat paper currency. Every American will be forced to register or suffer being unable to work or earn a living. They will be our chattel, and we will hold the security interest over them forever by operation of the law merchant under the scheme of secured transactions," which is admiralty law, uniform commercial code. "Americans, by unknowingly or unwittingly deliver their bills of lading to us, will be rendered bankrupt and insolvent," which the United States has been bankrupt and insolvent, and since we are de facto employees of USA Inc., our labor is what moves their currency, we are collateral against debt. "And it would be bankrupt and insolvent forever to remain economic slaves through taxation secured by their pledges. They will be stripped of their rights and given a commercial value designed to make us a profit, and they would be none the wiser for not one man in a million could ever figure out our plans. And if by accident one or two should figure it out, we have in our arsenal plausible deniability. After all, this is the only logical way to fund government, by floating liens and debt to the registrants in the form of benefits and privileges. We don't have rights, we have privileges. This will inevitably reap to us huge profits beyond our wildest expectations and leave every American a contributor to this fraud, which we will call social insurance. Without realizing it, every American will insure us for any loss we may incur, and in this manner, every American will unknowingly be our servant, however begrudgingly." And you can find that. Just look, you can find this on the internet under Woodrow Wilson and Colonel Edward Mendelhouse quote, and this will come up. This is, when I read this as well, this is the birth certificate they're talking about.
That's it.
Registering our biological property. So I looked to say, I looked to see if I could find anything to debunk it. I have not. If anybody finds anything that can debunk this quote, I would like to know, because I have spent a lot of time looking at it. So, you know, under this debt-based currency system, the credit that is extended by a few strokes on a keyboard is not even real money, but yet we pay interest. The bankers risk nothing. So, yeah, it's a clever form of slavery. I mean, most slaves, you have to feed them, you have to clothe them, you have to give them medical care, you know, you have to put a roof over their heads. We work 4 months a year for free.
Easily, yes.
Plus, we have to pay for our existence.
It's, yeah.
Like
the car tax, the house tax.
Yeah, Anna von Ritz is one of the most incredible researchers I've ever come across. She spent 40 years researching all this stuff about the corporation. If you ever get a chance, you ought to have her on your show. She would be an incredible. She was on John's show as well, and she really gives interviews. But she is,
what's her name?
Anna von Ritz. I'll shoot you an email, and I'll even give you her contact information. We're friends on Facebook.
Oh wow!
So. Yeah, I've got to meet a lot of people, good whistleblowers. There was a guy that was exposing the Syngenta, using atrazine, which is a pesticide that's used on our corn crops. And he found, because he was a researcher at Berkeley, that he was charged with studying the effects on amphibians. And he found that it caused genitalia malfunctioning, or, you know, not forming correctly, and it caused gender confusion. Now, if this stuff is sprayed on 50% of all of our corn crops,
yeah.
Which, by the way, Syngenta sold out to Monsanto.
Of course.
It's owned by Bayer. So, yeah. But anyway, when he blew the whistle on that, they did everything they could to try to discredit him. They made threats. One time he's in an airport. He told me he's in an airport, and some guy came up and said, "Hey, I hope your wife's okay."
Oh, man.
Yeah. So, and they hacked into his computer. Yeah, but he's a really good guy. I mean, I've talked to Dane Wigington numerous times about the geoengineering, the manipulation of the ionosphere, where they conduct their weather control system, and they're corrupting our soil. Pretty soon, the pH balance in our soil, we're not going to be able to grow food. As the farmers, as their yields get lower and lower, they're going to have to sell their farmland, and guess who will be there to buy it up? Monsanto, genetically modified seeds. Anyway. Like I said, sometimes I will go from one thing to another to slow me down, okay?
So. Yeah, I talked about this earlier in the show, but it fits perfectly what we're talking about now. I got my car fixed today, which I still got to pick up, but that's another story. But I walked over to one of the big breakfast chains to get some breakfast, and I was just kind of sitting in there. And I always have this bad habit of just trying to kind of shut down and get in my own little space where I was reading some more guest material for another guest that was coming up. But I was listening, and it was kind of the usual suspects that you would expect. It was kind of older people, but it was beautiful. They were talking about gardening, and they were talking about how their grandmother and great grandmother lived into their early hundreds and late 90s, and I was just sitting there, man, God, I wish. But they weren't really talking to me, but it felt like they were, because I was just sitting there thinking, man, these people get it. I don't even have to tell them, they get it. And there was an older black man next to me talking about, I don't even eat the tomatoes in the store. I grow my own because all that stuff tastes like garbage. And I was sitting there thinking, it's because it's spliced with jellyfish genes and it's going to kill you. You shouldn't eat that stuff.
Exactly. And that's why I love when I come across people like you, it energizes me.
Oh, me too, man. I'm excited. You're awake.
It motivates me. There's been times that I've wanted to, like, I don't think I'm getting through, man. I must just not be good at this. But then I'll run across somebody that gets it. I met an elderly gentleman at Harbor Freight.
Yeah.
He's in the military. And we were talking about fiat currency and stuff. And I said, well, here's an opportunity. And he says, son, he goes, I've known all of this stuff for a long time. He says, like the Bible says, with much knowledge can come much suffering.
That's the truth.
It was so neat. And he said, keep doing what you do. He goes, it will make a difference. And I left, with the hair on my arms raised, that I just randomly met somebody in line, at the cashier that knew the stuff that I know. And, it always brings a smile to my face. I met I have a really good friend that used to play with the Jets. His name is Marvin Jones. He played in the NFL for 11 years. He, just had his number retired with Florida State. And,
cool.
We were talking on the internet, and he's more knowledgeable than even I am, He says, hey, I'm gonna friend you on Facebook. Could we talk for a couple of weeks, because we met at this forum, we're talking, and I clicked on his profile. I had been talking to the Marvin Jones. I mean,
that's crazy.
Yeah, two-time Dick Butkus winner and fourth pick of the 93 draft. I said, man, I used to watch you play all the time. I watched you play in college. He was a teammate of Deion Sanders.
That's cool.
But we talk, he checks up on me, and we couldn't be any different. He's this huge mountain of a guy, this little white guy, but we're like brothers. We finish each other's sentences and stuff. But he's a kindred soul, man, and I'd give my life for the man. I'd give my life for any patriot that's trying to stand up and do the right thing. I told John B. Wells I'd give my life for him. I'd do it for you too, John.
Oh, thank you, man. It's crazy how they go after all these people, though. You mentioned the professor with the atrazine. It made me think of James Tracy, who was a professor at Florida Atlantic, and they went after him because he just dared to question the Sandy Hook narrative. He didn't even go out on a limb and say what you and I would say. He was just going, well, why don't we question this a little bit, which is what you're supposed to do following the scientific method. You're supposed to
analyze,
make your hypothesis, test your hypothesis. And you can't even question the hypothesis at all.
Exactly. And the thing is, when there's repercussions for an event like that, with draconian gun laws, which Obama passed 23 executive orders about gun control. Connecticut even took it a state further. It was going to make anybody that possessed a semi-automatic weapon as a felon. Yes. And all of this. And so when you've got something like this that has such far-reaching effects, shouldn't we make sure that all the I's are dotted and all the T's are crossed? But, man, anybody that questions it, man, they'll find the cops on their door. Wolfgang Halbig, same thing. Poor guy. Felt so bad for him.
Yeah.
They've made his – they claim that people are doxing the parents for because of things he said. Well, people don't know that Halbig's family has been – these people have contacted their employers of his wife and of his kids who want nothing to do with Sandy Hook.
Yeah, but they've been really doxed.
Strong Wolfgang to make him stop talking about it. But
hey, the last I heard, they were putting these little plastic ducks in his driveway or something. I kept hearing about that like 8-9 months ago or something.
Yes, it's been pretty brutal. But the amount of research that he's done, and heck, I found over 50 anomalies just watching the CNN footage. The school's roof was just in horrific repair, and there was mold. You could see mold coming up the side of the building. with Disability Act.
Uh-oh, we lost you for a minute. You must have been talking about something good. I lost you when you said something about mold.
Are you there?
Yes. I'm here. Are you?
Let me see if I can turn my video on and it won't disconnect the call. Okay, right. There we go.
There we go.
Yeah, start talking about San Diego because things start getting strange.
That's true, man. I got a message, something about reconnecting to the internet, right when you started talking about the mold on the side of the building.
Yeah, and also, as Sandy Hook, the school had never complied with the Americans with Disability Act, where they're supposed to have a 60-inch sign with blue, you know, with wheelchair symbol, and then the parking lot or the parking space is supposed to be blue with the white wheelchair symbol, and it's not there. It's the old, it was pre-2009.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, but that's just one of me. I mean, like, I have over, just by looking at the CNN footage, watching the people go in the firehouse and then come out the back, and then go back in to make it seem that there were more people roaming around than there actually was. Where's the footage of the if there was allegedly 470 some odd children there, where is the evacuation of those? We saw 10. Yeah. We saw 10 kids being evacuated, and then at some point they stopped and changed positions in line. There was a boy that was in front to put him to the back. So, I mean, it's like I said, there's so many. If it was just one or two things, it'd be different. But this is numerous. Numerous. And then you have the acting of Robbie Parker, where he's smirking around. He doesn't realize the cameras are rolling.
Yeah, I saw that one. That was just preposterous.
Yeah, my little brother, who is a he's not awake. He's a Christian, though. He says, let God handle everything, Dale. You shouldn't even be worrying about this stuff. But I showed him this, and he worked in the emergency room as a nurse. He's a critical care RN. He's about to become a nurse practitioner, one step below being a doctor.
Gotcha.
His wife is also a nurse. But anyway, he looked at the footage of Robbie Parker. He goes, man, that's really weird. I said, and here's something else. I said, no EMTs were allowed in the building, and all the children were declared dead within 15 minutes. And he says, well, that ain't right. He said, you know, when I worked in the ER, we've got elderly patients that come in that have been thought to be dead for an hour, but we still work on them for 30 minutes before we ever declare them dead, and it has to be, you know, somebody licensed has to declare them officially dead. So he's waking up a little bit, but he's still got a ways to go. But I will talk to people and see if they're open to listen to what I have to say. If they're not, I'm not going to waste my time. You know, I'm going to cast my line someplace else, you know.
Yeah, that's where I'm at. I've gotten kind of cynical over the years, where I can sort of get a feel just talking for a few minutes. I'm like, all right, well, they just want to talk about Netflix and sports. That's cool. They're not ready to handle anything beyond whatever.
You have an advantage over me. I mean, you're a clean cut, you know, very good looking guy, you know, and I'm this older guy that wears the biker bandana, you know. So I mean, maybe my appearance kind of puts people off. But people that know me, they know that I'm sincere, and that I do this because of the people that I'm going to be leaving behind. I don't do it for myself. I really don't care what happens to me. I feel like I've been living on house money. You know, I've been playing with house money for a while. So, and God's looked after me. So I've accomplished everything on earth that I want to accomplish. I've played in front of thousands of people in a band, and I had a lot of success playing sports and stuff. And I took good care of my family, and, you know, always supported them. I think there's really nothing on this earth, material wise, that I want. Everything I own, I could put into a little tiny U-Haul, their smallest U-Haul truck. I don't have material goods. I will, if I have people that I know that are in need, they take precedent. There's nothing on this earth that I really care about having. I just want my job and my mission is to try to get people to have some critical thinking skills, because this system of control is getting bigger even as we speak. Agenda 21, the UN Agenda 21, it's going on even in spite of what we may think that Trump is taking on a deep state. I mean, if you look at California, they're putting in everything having to do with Agenda 21. They're moving people out of the towns and trying to move them into the cities. The fires that took place in California were all started on purpose. The foundations were gone. There were cars that were burned up from the inside. These were direct energy weapons that they used. I have a really good friend that lives in California, and she showed me pictures of these blue, like blue laser lights that were coming down and hitting.
Oh, man.
Yeah. So, and she said, people think I'm crazy, but there's, we all saw it because we have a bunch of people that saw it, and they took pictures. There's even videos, YouTube videos showing these blue lights hitting. And then there's houses that are burned down, and about 10 feet away, there's trees are standing, and they still got the leaves. I mean, yeah, that makes absolutely no sense.
Yeah, it's like the weird tornado effect or something where one house is great and the house next door is decimated, except fires but don't really work that way.
No, they don't. Exactly. So, but anyway, what I'm trying to do when I talk is get people to start really looking at how things really are instead of what we're told. TV's the greatest propaganda tool ever invented. And if it was on TV, then it's got to be true. And the way that I always try to tell people is that think of yourself as one of the sheep in this huge pen, and every now and then the wolf comes in, and you think if you just keep your head down, don't make eye contact with the wolf, that he ain't going to take you. Well, eventually, the herd's going to get thinned out to the point that even if you keep your head down, you're going to get gobbled up.
That's it.
So there's more of us than there are of them, and if we were just to rise up in mass, and there's such a huge divide economically, financially, socially, racially, you know, even spiritually, you know, so we're all divided in all these little camps, and it makes us easier to conquer because we're so divided as a people. I've never seen us so divided as we are right now. This is beyond the pale, you know. And so if we're fighting each other, how can we see who's really instigating the trouble to begin with? And I don't believe in the I'm out of the left versus right paradigm. You know, I mean, Democrat, Republican, just left wing, right wing, bird in the middle controls them both.
That's the truth.
I get frustrated with this stuff all the time because I try to stay away from the social media. But when I get on there, I just have to limit my time because I just get increasingly mad. I look at this article and that article. And my response is always like, and then what? And then the people stood up and took action. And then I always say, nope, nobody did jack. Everybody just said, oh, somebody, or they always say, oh, Trump will fix it. Or the Q will fix it, or Trump's, you know, the indictments and all this other mess. And I'm like, what about the people, man? Like, I always say the 3% were involved in the revolution. I was saying the other day, like, I don't think we got 2% right now.
I don't think so, but there is an awakening happening. I really believe that.
I hope
now,
so.
Is it fast enough? Is it fast enough? And has it grown enough to make a difference yet? Only time will tell. And but that's why people like you were so important. And the other people that are out there, you know, I had at one time over 180 some odd different alternative media channels on YouTube. Now it's down to about 67. They've just been purging them. And shadow banning on Twitter has gotten totally out of hand. So they're trying. So obviously they're scared, or they wouldn't be trying to shut us down.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, I think they're definitely manipulating the numbers pretty good on a lot of people. So.
Oh yeah, for sure, no doubt about it. But is there anything? Like I said, there's 1,000 topics I could go into. But if there's anything specific you'd like me to expand on.
I hate to say the obvious one. What the heck can we do about all this stuff?
Do what you do. Do what I do. And don't be silent. Don't throw up your hands and say it's hopeless, because it's not hopeless. Did you ever see that movie A Bug's Life with your kids?
I think I did. I saw it. I saw that there was a little sample that I used to put in a class I taught that was an undisclosed class in an undisclosed location. But I used to put that in the lecture just to sort of show people, hey, click, 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 click. You're the bug.
Exactly. But I want to be that little bug that stands up to the big to the big grasshoppers and takes the beat down and gets back up on my feet.
Yeah.
And say, you're not so tough. And then once they see that, I'll take the beat down. And if people would wake up, say, well, there's more of us than there are in them. And we have been abused. If people knew just a tenth of what I've researched, there would be a pitchforks and torches march on D.C. And there would be, they'd be hanging some of these people from lampposts if they actually understood what has been done to us. And but, what can be done about it? Never, never, never acquiesce. I don't acquiesce. In my own ways, I don't belong in the system.
Yeah.
You know, I fight it every chance I get. I'm not going to go right into specifics for obvious reasons, but I'm not going to follow unconstitutional laws. We don't even have laws in this country. What we have are acts, statutes, codes, and ordinances, because corporations cannot pass laws. That's why it's called the Health Care Act. That's why it's called the Patriot Act. We don't have laws. It's not the Patriot Law or the Health Care Law. It's an act because it's a corporation. It's a corporate entity. So, yeah, we're not under, if you go into a courtroom and you see a gold fringe flag, you're in an admiralty court. You're in a uniform commercial code. So, yeah, we lost common law. And the common law courts are still around, but people have to fill them. And has anybody ever thought about why we're still under the Libor Code from the Civil War? The Libor Code still, and nobody's ever shown me a treaty between the North and the South. There was an end of... there's an end to the fighting. There's the surrender at Appomattox, but there's never been a treaty. So we're still under martial law, if you want to be technical about it, because we have the gold fringe flag. We're under the Uniform Commercial Code. So
that's pretty scary in and of itself.
Yeah, and Black's Law Dictionary, unless you understand legalese, you cannot defend yourself in court, because these what we think are just regular words that we use every day, like, do you understand what you're being charged with? He's not asking you if you comprehend what it is that you're being accused of. The judge is asking you to stand under his judgment. That's what, look in Black's Law Dictionary. A person is a corporation. We were incorporated. That's what your all caps name is. We were incorporated. They put the sole of your foot on your birth certificate. Your soul. It's like, it is a water. It is a before your feet ever touch land, the baby's foot is their footprint is put on their birth certificate. I don't know if you noticed this, but they always put the birth of a child in the newspaper. They did not just be nuts. No, they're notifying that you have 3 days to come and claim the biological properties of your child. After that, it's considered dead. It becomes a corporate fiction, lost at sea. Yes, that's exactly why they do it. It's a notification. The thing, ignorance of the law is no excuse, okay? Now, there are people that have gone in and claimed their biological property, and they've made it to where their child is not a ward of the state. Because when you register something, according to Black's Law Dictionary, you turn over ownership of it to it, and they give you privileges to use it. Like, you have to register your car.
Yeah.
Register it. Don't do this, don't do that, then come and take your car. And the same thing with, you know, child protective services. If you don't treat your child like the way, you know, you give your kid a swat on the butt and somebody reports to CPS, they come and take your child. They can legally do it because it's theirs. You registered it with the birth certificate. So I know it sounds crazy, but I'm telling you, I found all the documentation. I found all the acts. I got quite a dossier of stuff that I've researched, and it's horrified me each and every time. But it's also done one other thing, John. It's made me mad.
Oh yeah, that's where I'm at,
and it's given me this resolve. And I always tell people, you don't have to take my word for it. Do your own due diligence. If you can refute what I have to say, please by all means let me know, because I never want to give out erroneous information. But you know what? I've never lost a debate because I can back up what I say with facts and data. So, but
I feel like you and I are on that Howard Beale wavelength where we're just mad. We're not going to take it anymore. Like, that's where I'm at. I just get frustrated because I look around at the general public and I'm like, aren't you mad? Like no, the game's coming on. The game's going to be great tonight.
I know. And the thing is that there has been an intentional dumbing down of our society. And it's they've done it through chemical means. They've done it through the public fool system. You know, they're not teaching kids how to think critically. They're teaching them what to think and learning by rote, by memorization, and it's the bell system. B.F. Skinner's, you know, the bell system.
Absolutely.
Getting us used, like Pavlov's dog. When the bell rings, we got to go here now. You know? There was a guy, the Dodd Committee, that was commissioned in 1954 to look into the. What the tax-free foundations like Carnegie, Ford, and Rockefeller, which, by the way, also is Council on Foreign Relations. They always referred to the CFR as Carnegie, Ford, and Rockefeller.
They're the ones controlling academia for the most part.
Yeah.
They're the ones doling out the money.
Thank you. Exactly. And Charlotte Iserby, that's her name. She worked in the Reagan administration, and she found out that basically they're putting in the type of curriculum that's marching us towards a totalitarianism and a communist-style one-world, you know, entity. And they're teaching our children that we're global citizens, not a United States citizen. And you know, this whole global warming thing is that all goes back to the Iron Mountain report that was written back, that came to light in 1967, where they said that some type of crisis would have to be created in order to keep the people busy working and paying their taxes, and it would have to be an existential threat to where that our only means of survival was to turn over more and more control to the government, possibly a world government. Well, the Club of Rome was formed shortly after that, 1969, and they're just a bunch of elites that formed part of the UN. They're part of the UN. They're an offshoot of the UN, and they're the ones that came up with sustainable development back in 1972. And they had this came up with this book called Limits to Growth. And that the lifestyles of the middle class was not sustainable. Of course, it's sustainable for the upper class.
Oh, yeah, of course.
But our high meat intake and use of air conditioning and what they refer to as fossil fuels, which, by the way, oil is not a fossil fuel. Okay, they found oil 2 miles deep. It's abiotic fluid. It's created by the shifting of the crust in the earth. It's they have found old oil fields that have been that they thought were tapped out, and they're starting to, you know, have oil again. But they create these artificial shortages because it's a petroleum based economic system. So as the, because the petrodollar, this happened in 71 when the Bretton Woods Agreement basically ended, where all these nations brought in their gold, and what they agreed the dollar would be the world's reserve currency. And there was this gentleman's agreement the United States would not print more dollars than there was gold to back it up at the agreed upon price. So I think it was $35 an ounce. It hadn't changed since 1933.
Oh man.
So anyway, the Vietnam Wars, and we're spending all this money in Vietnam, and these countries that have their gold stored and they have all these dollars because the United States is printing so many of them. They're like, yeah, we want our gold back.
Yeah. You know? And the US is like, you were dumb enough to believe us on that one.
Yeah. God almighty. So anyway, as the gold started being, you know, depleted, the gold supply was depleted, and there's still a bunch of money out there, a bunch of fiat Federal Reserve notes out there. Nixon came on TV in August of 71 and said he was taking us off the gold standard. He's going to end the speculators. Basically what he was saying, these people that want their real real money back.
Yeah, the people that want what they put in the 70s.
Exactly. So he ended that. But what he did do to keep the dollar as the world's reserve currency, he sent Kissinger over to the Middle East and said, look, we'll shut down we won't pump near as much oil, and we'll let you guys do it. And if you will agree to only take U.S. dollars in exchange for your oil. So countries had to get dollars in order to buy oil. So that means they had to trade with the United States and to accumulate enough dollars to buy oil. So that's where the petrodollar comes from. And any of these countries that find that they don't like this agreement, say like Libya and Iraq didn't, you know, they're going to find our military on their doorstep to open up a can of democracy on their butt.
That's exactly it.
So anyway, like Libya, they wanted to, Gaddafi had enough gold to have the dinar, and he was only going to accept gold for his oil instead of this worthless paper currency that can be printed into oblivion. Because there's nothing to back it up. Doesn't have to. I tell you what backs up the dollar: the military might of the
industrial complex.
That's what backs up the dollar. So, but it's a petroleum based economy that these robber barons and banking oligarchs have set up. So if they were to lose control of, say, the energy, the oil and stuff, and if there was actually an alternative source for energy that they couldn't control, they would be rendered totally impotent. And we know for a fact that Nikola Tesla had come up with these energy devices, free energy, because we're surrounded by energy. And he came up with devices that could harness, and each house could have one. And they were self-generating producers of electricity. And J.P. Morgan helped fund it, but then after he came up with the invention, J.P. Morgan says, well, where's the meter at? We wouldn't need one. It's self-generating. So anyway, after Tesla died, of course, they ran in, ransacked his place, got all of his patents and stuff. So that, and I believe that's where the ionospheric heaters come from that they use in connection with geoengineering, where they spray heavy metal nanoparticulates in the upper atmosphere, and then they energize them. And doing that, they can manipulate the jet stream and squash high-pressure zones. They haven't been, they're not able to create low-pressure zones, but they can squash them, and they can create high-pressure zones. So they can move, they create these weather anomalies. And what they do by doing that, they claim, oh, look, global warming, see? We used to have those in D.C. Look at this. You know, it's, the weather's gone crazy, man. It's because of global warming. It's because you drive a car to your job so you can eat out an existence on this little prison planet. We, you must be stopped, you know.
Yeah, you got to pay Al Gore some money.
Yeah, exactly. And I always use this argument. So tell me exactly, how is by paying a carbon tax to the banking oligarchs that control all of the oil companies and control the financial system, how is that going to cool the planet exactly? How does that work?
Yeah, I was talking about that in the intro, where California is going to have a 1% climate tax or something they're going to put in restaurants now. So if you go out to eat in California, you'll have your 1% tax for the environment.
Yeah. Yeah, they can never steal enough money from you. They're always looking for ways to take the money.
That's why I said it'll be 1% now, and next year it'll be 5%, and then 10%, and then before long it'll be a mandatory $5 on your bill or something.
Right. There's no such thing as a temporary tax. The first tax that was put on tobacco was to help pay for World War One. Has it ever been rescinded? No, but it's been increased quite a bit. So there's nothing so permanent as a temporary tax, believe me. So,
yeah, what I found so much with talking to a lot of students is that students actually want to know this stuff. That's the kind of bizarre thing. I think a lot of people write off the millennials. Like, I'm guilty of doing that. I think, oh, they're crazy. But then when you actually talk to some of them, they want to hear all this crazy stuff that nobody's going to tell them. But unfortunately, most people in academia can't tell them that stuff if they want to stick around and still get a check. So
part of the Communist Manifesto was to infiltrate the educational system.
Yeah, and that's the long march through academia.
Exactly. And you come to find out that McCarthy was dead on with his assessment about the communists. The Venona papers proved him correct. Of course, they didn't come out till 35 years later. But yes, there still is a huge communist influence within the our intelligence agencies and the State Department. It's only gotten worse. And these people have never given up on the idea that, well, communism didn't work here and it didn't work there because their intellectuals like us were not in charge of it.
That
really is their thinking, and it's ridiculous too. And what I found out when I talk to on the blogosphere, when I'm talking to leftists, they don't have a clue. I mean, not even the slightest clue about how the financial system actually works. And unless you understand that, that is the root of all of our problems, is this corrupt, dishonest monetary system that creates the type of attitude of, well, these people got this and I've got nothing. And that's not fair. Something's unfair. And the reason why they're not prospering is because the very people that created this are pushing them to do what they're doing. Like I said, it's crazy the way that how easily they're manipulated, but it's due to a lack of understanding and education, and they also seem to suffer from arrested development. You know, they've never really grown up. That's why they most of their opinions are based on emotion, not fact.
I mean, to your point earlier, the television's one of those main triggers that's causing all this wealth envy. So you get all these people going, well, where's mine? Where's my Kardashian Ferrari? And where's my, you know, $5 million house? And they don't get that something had to come first, that, you know, the chicken or the egg. But in this case, they had to get money to buy that.
Yeah. I mean, one of the things I really admire about you is that I know that you've been dealing with some setbacks, and you keep fighting, man. You keep fighting, and you, not only do you keep fighting, but you keep doing this, you know, because you realize how important it is. But you've never like, oh man, you know, I need to bail out. Somebody needs to do this and that for me, man. You're just like, man, I'm fighting. I'm going to fight. There's no quit in you. And I respect that a lot.
Oh, thank you, man. Yeah, I've talked about it on the last few shows. It's kind of become almost a comedy now, just the stupid mess going on behind the scenes. And it's not all technical and underhanded stuff. A lot of it's just like life stuff. But life stuff has been insane. Yeah.
But I'm also a very spiritual person. I believe in Jesus Christ.
Oh,
I believe
absolutely.
That. And I believe that I've been attacked. I've been attacked since I started down this road. I destroyed my wrist about 3 months after I did a show with John. Totally destroyed my wrist.
Oh, my God.
They had to put pins and screws and a plate in it. And I couldn't work for almost 6 months. But God saw my needs through. And I didn't stop doing what I was doing. And I've had some... I have a nerve disease called post-herpetic that I got from getting a case of shingles that was the Mac Daddy of all cases. And it's been very debilitating at times. And it's caused me to be, when I'm not working, to be kind of a recluse. But you know, I do a lot of research doing that. But, I mean, yes, Satan will attack you. He will. If you're over the target, you're not going to get a safe passage through this journey, okay? But I'm not going to quit. You're not going to quit.
No, I'm sticking around.
You don't expect anything from anybody. If I don't earn it, and if I don't produce it on my own, I don't want it. But I also know that I'm not going to. Oh, gee, I'm going to be one of the sheep and keeps my head down so the wolf doesn't see me. No, I'm going to take on the wolf. I'm going to put my little paws.
That's it, man.
Fight the wolf, you know. I'm not going to go down. You know, I'm going to go down swinging. So, but like I said, I respect that about you, John. And
thank you, sir.
And I respect your talent and ability to interview people. It's really good, man. You're really good at what you do.
I appreciate it, man. Thank you so much. It's definitely an honor to speak to all the guests like yourself, and just so many people are touching on all these different facets of what the heck's going on. It's kind of, nobody's doing it alone. You know, I always thought, before I got into this and got onto the program, I was like, I'm the only person in the county that must feel this way. And like, ironically enough, I was communicating with somebody earlier today who's got a book coming out. I'm trying to get him on the show, but he lives in the same town. I was like, I literally emailed him and I was like, I can't believe there's other smart people here. I thought it was just me. So if nothing else, I mean, I love the camaraderie and the communication that this sort of stuff brings, because it lets everybody know that they're not alone and they're not fighting the fight by themselves. So
exactly. You're my brother and you're my sister. If you're in this fight, I don't care what your color you are. I don't care what your religion is. If you're in this fight, you're kindred souls to me. And
absolutely.
I have them all over the United States. When I've done other podcasts and shows before, but the biggest one was John's show. And I got messages from people all over the world that heard that podcast. And some of them crazy said, I don't normally participate on Facebook, but I knew this is the only way I could contact you. I wanted to tell you how much I enjoyed the information that you shared. And you know, it encourages you. And I hope that I encourage you. I hope the people on Meet at the Shade Tree, our Facebook page, I hope that I noticed that they always like your videos and stuff.
Oh, thank
so.
You, man. Yeah, before we get off, definitely tell people how they can find everything Dale Smith.
Okay, great. Yeah, that's good. Also, one thing that you mentioned that I really liked is that you have so many different people on. Not everybody knows everything, okay? But certain people have certain pieces of the puzzle that I don't have, and maybe I have something that they don't have. And it's not a competition. It's like, well, I know more than you. Somebody that's only been doing this for a year can teach me something, or can show me something, or take
absolutely,
me.
Absolutely, man.
And I listen to them. I'm just so grateful that they're doing it. And if they can teach me something and I can show them something, man, that's what it's about. And I've learned something from every guest that I've listened, you know, that you've had on. Some of it's been heartbreaking too, to listen to some of the stuff that some of your guests, you know, it's just,
yeah, it's tough.
It is, but it's makes me pray more, you know, I mean,
some of the stuff I hear and I'm like, I don't even know what to say. I'm sitting talking to somebody and I'm like, man, I'm speechless. Yeah, I mean, I'm supposed to be talking with you, but I don't know what the heck to tell you. This is just dark and bad.
I know. I had tears rolling down my eyes on that one interview you had. It just, man, it was just heartbreaking, you know, but this needs to get out and people need to know. And
absolutely. Well, we'll definitely have all of your information on the guest media section, but definitely Meet at the Shade Tree on Facebook is an awesome group that everybody should look into. There's some great people on there sharing a lot of really awesome information.
Yeah, that was a page that me and Marvin Jones started. His nickname in college was Marvin Shade Tree Jones. So,
oh, man.
We renamed it Meet at the Shade Tree, and it was really awesome how things came together. And there's so much incredible information on there that we've all shared. I mean, you could just scroll through the history and just find links after links. And of course, your stuff is on there, and it will always be on there.
Thanks.
And for sure. And there's a camaraderie there too, because we're very close knit. There's a few hundred of us, but we're very close to each other. We're very close knit. Some people are more into reading than they are participating, but mm-hmm. You know, we all IM each other and we talk and stuff. So if you're looking for kindred souls, definitely Meet at the Shade Tree on Facebook. Is I'm one of the administrators, so just when you click on that page, say, "Hey, I heard you on John's show. I'd like to be a member." I'll click you right on. So,
well, that sounds awesome, man. Well, thank you so much for being on the show. We got to do this again. I say that with every guest. We scratch the surface, and there's so much insanity to a point. So much people can't even take like an 8-hour show, but sometimes.
I hear you. I could give a talk 2 hours a day for a month and never cover the same topic twice.
Yeah.
But what it would do is that, but it all meets at the same place.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are certain roads that like we said, downtown Dallas at the West End, there's like five or six different highways that come from all different directions, but they all meet right at that spot.
Oh, yeah.
So but that's how all this stuff connects. It's not accidental. It's all very compartmentalized as what's going on, and there's certain people that know only certain aspects of it, and there's only very few people that know what the big grand master plan is. It's like a pyramid, you know. But John, thank you so much, dude. You are the
thank you, man.
I enjoyed this so much, man. I can't believe how quickly time blew by.
I know, we got to do it again for real.
So. For sure, man. And like I said, make sure that people know I'm gonna posted again on my Facebook page and on Meet at the Shade Tree. But where can people go to help support what you're doing? Because I know it costs money. It's not free. This is bandwidth and stuff. So where can people go to? What's your PayPal account? I know I've got it on here. I just don't have it handy. But
the easiest way to do it is probably just go to anomicage.com. And thank you for getting me to do that, because I'm the world's worst at not mm-hmm. plugging my own show or my own stuff. I always tell people I'm great at producing something. But the marketing, I don't know where that marketing guy is, but he is not here. So.
Yeah, well, anyway, I'm a little bit late on my donation, but it'll become this week. Okay, so you can count on it.
But no problem at all.
Thank you so much, John. You are the man.
Yeah, definitely go to anomicage.com. Down there in the bottom right, there's a PayPal button, and you can do it from there. You can also go to my Twitter account, which is just anomicage. You can search for Anomic Age, it'll be there too. And then you can donate from there. It's paypal.me/AnomicAge. I added that recently because I was like, I really need to start plugging my own stuff for some reason.
Right.
But yeah, everyone, please check that out. And I will be happy to accept your donations. But thank you so much, Dale. And we will talk again soon, man.
Yes, sir. Take care, my man.
Make sure... I always say this, but you can't do everything, but you can absolutely do something. So please, everyone, be safe out there and try to do your part. Try to do something to change this crazy world that we live in. We all got a part to play.
Amen.
All right. Thank you. We'll talk to you soon.
Yes, sir. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to The Anomic Age, a John Age Project. For past shows, further info, and to comment, go to anomicage.com. That's AnomicAge.com. Till next time, thank you for listening to The Anomic Age. I'm